You're falling apart, you're not living right. I went to the doctor and the doctor said loud, you got to stop hanging out with that old in crowd. Living's a battle and you're losing the fight. To the doctor, and the doctor said, boy, your body is a temple, it's not a toy. Fill up this here paper cup and give it to the nurse, don't spill it now. I went to the doctor, doctor said, friend, this should be the middle, but it could be the end. You better get better, else you're gonna get worse.
Hello, this is Ken Logan and the Doctor's Inn. I'm a family practice doctor here in Chico, and I bring you the third Thursday of each month, the Doctor's Inn, which includes subjects relating to health and medicine. And I'd like to do subjects or cover subjects that you're interested in, and if you wanted to let me know about that, you could email me at klogan.md@yahoo.com. The opinions voiced on this particular show do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. The Doctor's Inn is made possible by generous contributions from KZFR supporters and by Friends of the Arts, a state local partner to the California Arts Council. Since 2001, Friends of the Arts has been creating economic opportunity through arts and culture by producing community festival and events including Artoberfest, Chico Paleo, the True North Tour, the Silent Film Festival, the NorCal Jazz Festival. It's a long list, isn't it, folks? The Salmon Festival and more. To learn more about Friends of the Arts, visit friendsoftheartsupstate.org. And by the Feather River Recreation and Park District in Orville. 2016 Feather River Cleanup will be on Saturday, September 17th from 8 to 11 a.m. Volunteers are needed and all material will be provided, with a barbecue for volunteers to follow at Riverbend Park. Sturdy shoes and shade hats is recommended. Visit Feather River Cleanup on Facebook and help keep the river beautiful. Well, today's show, I have sitting with me here in the studio, Dr. Mark Lundberg. Hello, Dr. Lundberg.
Dr. Logan, it is great to be here with you, you know. It's great to be with Ray Lager, too, you know.
Yes.
I mean, he's, I tell you, is he the one that picks all the great music around here?
Yes, great music
you have. Wow.
Yeah.
I love just hearing your music.
Hey, and speaking of that, tell us again, Ray, who the performer is, the artist that was playing music for us there.
Our theme song is always Loudon Wainwright III.
Who is coming. And he is coming to
Paradise Performing Arts Center. So stay
Saturday
tuned
the 24th.
Yeah, right.
With Iris Dement.
Exactly.
Oh man.
Maybe we should go up there and say hi.
I think so.
Don't tell him we're using the steam. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, I know. Hey, and Dr. Lundberg, you've been on this show so many various times, and it's so much a joy to have you on and share your information with us. You're a great guy, great doc. You have made some changes in your professional life here recently. Is this correct?
I have. You know, it happened so fast. But I was 20 years at the health department.
Wow.
20 years. Man, that's a long time.
That is a long time. So you're with us today, and I appreciate that. The listeners, I hope, are appreciating that as well. And what I hope you can do is tell us what's going on in your professional life. Tell us what you're doing. I think that's going to be important for all of us to hear.
Well, thank you. It has been a pleasure to be here with you and the show. This is a great show, and it's been fun to be here. I, many years ago, I started taking care of opiate addicts. Realized that particularly poor addicts need access to all the different types of treatments. And there are different types of treatments for people who are addicted to opiates.
Can I just break in real quick, and I apologize for that. You can slap me around. Opiates. Give us some examples of opiates, please.
Great question. Very, very important question. Well, the one that probably people have heard of the most is things like Norco, Vicodin, and then, of course, the ones that are what people might call harder opiates, heroin, and then injectables you might get in the hospital, like Dilaudid or Demerol or morphine. These are really important medicines and do such good work for people in the hospital and in an acute pain setting, but they are not so great as chronic meds because they develop some unusual patterns of people's lives, and they get into what we call physical dependence, and they also become abusive in the way they use the medicines, and it really alters their life in really, really significant ways. So people. We have an opiate problem in this country, and I think that a lot of people realize that we're hearing about it from the White House, we hear about it from politicians, we hear about it from our medical leaders. There is an opiate problem that's been identified in our country. I worry sometimes we may be swinging so far that we're going to remove this good medicine from some people, because there are good reasons for this medicine.
Mm-hmm.
But there's going to be a lot of attention. I think a lot of people are going to be cut off of their opiates. Many of them appropriately, but it will be traumatic for people when they get cut off, and people will be upset, and they will be angry at their healthcare providers, and there will be some medical consequences to that. But we have a challenge in our country about opiate addiction. But once people are addicted, there are a few medicines that help them. One of them that's common is called methadone. Methadone is only offered in federally qualified, federally approved, federally licensed centers. And in Chico, we have one. A company called Aegis has a clinic, and it's a clinic that's the furthest north in California. There is no other methadone clinic in California north of Chico. So many people drive every day to get a dose of methadone to help them with their opiate addiction.
And Aegis is how do you spell that?
AEGIS.
AEGIS, and that's for methadone addiction to help those patients, and they get a little dose of methadone. Well, I don't know about a little. They get a dose of methadone given to them every day, where the providers there, the medical people there, watch them take that
dose
right. Every day.
Every day.
Okay.
Every day. They're very good folks over there. I've met them. They're trying to do good work. Some people might say, well, what is the kind of a treatment is that? You're taking people from an addicted to opiate, you're taking them to another addiction, because they are going to be addicted or dependent, I should say, dependent on methadone. But I do remind people that it is true they're dependent, but it is legal and is paid for. And you know, the fact, a lot of people, when they're stuck in opiate addiction, one, there's a financial issue going on, and there's a lot of robbery, and there's a lot of theft, and there's a lot of hustling, and there's a lot of taking things from loved ones, and a lot of wasted money that people, they get poor, they do stupid things, they lose their property, they lose their things. So methadone is paid for by insurances, and that's useful. And then it's legal. Everyone that's using opiates illegally is at risk for being arrested, put in jail, having their children taken away from them, having all kinds of complications. So even though you are moving from an addiction to, you still are dependent when you're on methadone, but it is a opportunity to build a foundation of strength in your life, so that you can maybe move. The goal is to move off of methadone. It's a step towards health. So methadone is one of the options.
And they just real quickly, they can the provider there can taper you down and hopefully, like
that's
you
their
said,
goal. That's their goal.
Get your goal being to get you slowly off of the methadone and off of the dependency or the addiction.
That's right, exactly.
Okay.
So as they build strength in their life through counseling and as group therapy and different things, they try to encourage in you. Well, in the same way as methadone, there's another medicine called Suboxone. it is prescribed in a different way. Regular doctors can prescribe it, where, like I said, methadone can really only be used for addiction in these federally licensed facilities. Suboxone is a medicine that doctors need to get some special training, and then they can prescribe it out of their private offices or clinics. And I found that that option was not available to poor people in our county many years ago, and so I took the training and started taking care of people that were poor folks in Butte County, and I really got inspired by that work. And when an opportunity came along at the Butte County Behavioral Health Department, they were looking to expand their drug and alcohol treatment opportunities and treatment options for their patients. And a chance to do that full time. I thought maybe that'd be a good change in my career to do something a little different. So that's what I've done. I moved over to the behavioral health department of the county, where we're going to be working. I'm going to be working with drug addicts every day, and trying to help them make that positive step in their life towards health. So I mentioned methadone. I mentioned Suboxone. There is another treatment too. There are people who can be on naloxone. Naloxone is a medicine that blocks opiate use. So if there may be some candidates, I haven't learned to use that yet. I hope to use it as an option, but it blocks. It doesn't provide a replacement for an opiate. It just blocks opiates. And there's an ability to give a monthly shot that'll block people for a whole month called Vivitrol. And those, there's special indicators. Particularly, we're looking right now in Butte County of using that for people coming out of jail. Because there's a lot of people at great risk at the time they leave jail. They have every good intention in jail. They say, you know, I've messed up my life with opiates. They haven't used opiates for weeks or days while they've been in jail. So they've completely weaned and withdrawn from opiates. And as they leave, they have every good intention. But, boy, that's a big transition when you go from incarceration to the community. And you go back to environments where you see people using, and you all of a sudden have hungers and cravings. So Vivitrol is we're going to start using that in Butte County to give people who voluntarily want to have the protection as they leave jail, to give them that protection for a month, so that when they walk out, they don't get right back into their drug addiction.
And that's an injection, and it lasts about a month?
About a month.
And that medicine, naltrexone, does come orally as well, daily medicine orally.
That's right. That's right.
But this is an injectable product, does the same thing.
Does the same thing for a
decreases
month.
Decreases their desire or their physical wish for the opiate.
That's right.
Okay, gotcha.
That's right. So those are the three options. So I am going to be helping in this area of Suboxone right now. And, boy, I've seen a lot of great patients. I mean, people that are inspiring to me because, you know, to come into my office, you've got to admit you got a big problem. And these people, I'm very inspired when they come in there and they're willing to sort of just lay that out to me. And I feel honored by it. And, you know, the ones that are particularly heart-wrenching to me is women, mothers, because it's almost like they have a war of loves in their heart. I mean, they've got a love for their kids, but they got this drug that has created this dysfunctional love in them too, and they're so filled with shame and guilt because they can see that they have made bad choices. I mean, they love their kids. I don't doubt that for a second. They love their kids, but they make choices that are not always in the best interest of their children because that drug is so powerful, the craving, the hunger, you know, they just want that. And they have
physical and mental addiction, both physical and mental addiction.
You know,
they're asking you for help.
That's right. You know, a lot of these people, when they're on, when they started on opiates, they were looking for euphoria because opiates give an incredible euphoria, particularly in the injecting form or smoking form, really euphoria. You know, euphoria is we associated with things like sexual orgasm as euphoria. You know, just the joy, you know, a joy you get from something. Injecting opiates is an incredible euphoria. It's unfortunate we really weren't made to handle that euphoria and do well with that. It's just too powerful. We're much better off enjoying the euphoria from healthy things in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
But after a while, the drug does not provide euphoria. All they're using the drug for after a while is to avoid withdrawal. Withdrawal is so uncomfortable. It is so undesirable. you know, they get symptoms that are just dreadful to them, and you know, anxiety. Their body hurts. Their eyes water. Their nose waters. They're just anxious and upset, and it's just a very undesirable withdrawal. It's just to be avoided. People hate it. They don't want to go through it. It's just very undesirable. So they use just to avoid withdrawal after a while.
Mm-hmm.
And if I you know, and also I have, it's remarkable what the body can handle. I have met people that have taken more than 1,000 pills a month. Over 1,000 pills. It almost that's remarkable to me. I mean,
of an opiate,
like
from
Oxycontin,
the street, or,
and uh-huh. and morphine, and
uh-huh.
well, no, there are. I've met, unfortunately, there are doctors who have been overprescribers.
Uh-huh.
They don't. Some of these don't exist in our county any longer, but there have been overprescribers at mm-hmm. times that have done. I don't think they've done their patients really that much good, but.
Mm-hmm.
But they had. I've met people who've gotten over 1,000 mm-hmm. pills of opiates a mm-hmm. month from a physician.
Mm-hmm.
Wow,
mm-hmm.
my, that's remarkable, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of these people, it's remarkable how many start their opiate addiction in junior high,
mm-hmm.
in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Met one gentleman who had his first injection of heroin under 10 years of age.
Oh wow!
Can imagine that?
Wow!
Wow! What a challenge for that person in their
wow.
life. But I must say that I've been very satisfied and very rewarded in my work, because this medicine does seem to help people. It's a legal medicine. It's legally prescribed, and it
this is Suboxone.
Tell us
what Suboxone is a little bit more. Is that the medication that's a combination of two medicines?
Yeah, it sure is. It sure is. There's an opiate called buprenorphine, and there's the naloxone in it. And naloxone was put in it to prevent these injecting drug users from being tempted to inject it, because it's there. If you were trying to, you know, I found that opiate addicts, they're like hobby chemists. I mean, they really know how to cook things, and they really know how to draw drugs out, and they know how to get drugs out of pills and out of pads and out of patches and so to prevent someone from trying to take Suboxone to inject it, they put this naloxone in there, so if anyone was to inject it, they would just be totally blocked.
It
isn't absorbed through the mouth. It's not absorbed through the mouth.
Okay.
If you use it in the mouth, it is not absorbed.
It doesn't block the opiate effect of the Suboxone.
It does
not. If they tried to inject it, it would block it.
It would.
And then the opiate product is called what?
Buprenorphine.
Buprenorphine. And that is an opiate in effect.
It's an opiate in effect. It does.
Mm-hmm.
It helps take care of the withdrawal, so these people don't have withdrawal. They feel normal. And the other thing we watch and we try to measure, and that's people's craving or hunger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can imagine if your listeners stopped eating or stopped drinking for 3 days, they would probably be so – their overwhelming thought would be constantly, where do I get water? Where do I get water? Where do I get food? Where do I get food? Their hunger would be irresistible. I mean, if you put water near them, they'd go for it. I mean, their hunger would just be irresistible. We try to use this medicine. One of the goals we have is to try to lower their craving for opiates. If they're on the right dose, they really don't think about opiates. Many of them, their mission every day in life, their mission is where are they going to get their next opiate fix? Where are they going to find it?
For the people who are addicted.
Are addicted to it. Where am I going to get my next
mm-hmm.
opiate?
Mm-hmm.
They
got
to find the money. They got to find the person that has it.
Yeah.
And so if we can, it really helps these. If you don't have craving, you don't have hunger, boy, you've got a good chance you're not going to relapse.
So these people who, with the addiction, heroin, morphine, oxycodone, Norco, whatever opiate they have, every day is trying to think about where they're going to get their next fix, how they're going to obtain it, where they're going to get the money for it, is it, you know, legally
That's
or
right.
illegally, depending if they're getting it from a prescription or whatever. And
That's
you're
right.
saying that with Suboxone, once the dose is correct via a doctor like yourself prescribing the Suboxone for the patient, they don't have that daily craving and deciding, and it isn't running their life
That's
each
exactly
day
right.
to try to decide or try to figure out how they're going to obtain this opiate and where they're going to get it and how they're going to pay for it and all that kind of thing. It takes all of that away, and they're stable on a set amount of this Suboxone.
Saw a guy today
gotcha.
Who had started last week, And he said that was one of the challenges because every day he had called it a mission. Every day I have a mission. Mm-hmm. I've got to find an opiate and I got to find a way to pay for it every day. And and that dominated his day,
life.
A mission.
God, I can't imagine.
And now he said, wow, I'm applying for a job and I'm working on my health. And actually, I don't know what to do to fill my time all the way. That mission dominated so much of my time. I don't have that now.
And it's like a new life.
So that's really what we hope, is to build a foundation of health, because there's still a challenge. Get off this Suboxone has been more difficult than I was hoping when I first started. People do great on it, but I want everyone to get off of it because you know, you're not fully healthy to me while you're on Suboxone either.
Yeah.
There is a debate about that, though, is should we view opiate addiction like a chronic disease and this is a treatment? You don't tell people that have hypertension or have heart disease, you know, you have heart disease, but I'm only going to treat you for a year, and then you live with your heart disease. You know, you may have to be on a hypertensive or a heart medicine the rest of your life. So there is that model some people are trying to promote, that this is a chronic disease and should be treated like a chronic disease. And I will say, okay, I think that might be a helpful model, but why don't we use the model of adult onset diabetes as the way we look at it? No good doctor having a new diabetic, adult diabetic, wouldn't say to their patient, you know, if we get you on the right diet and we get you exercising, we get you losing weight, we can get you off the medicines and you will not need any medicines for diabetes. You know, I don't think there'd be any good doctor would not try to get people to get free of their diabetes medicines. Now, of course, we know not everyone is going to get there. They're not going to be able to lose weight. They're not going to get the right exercise. And they'll have to be on diabetic medicine maybe the rest of their life. But you should try to get them off them. I think the same way with this Suboxone. I've got to try to help get these people free from this medicine. You know, if they build a strong foundation and they start, changing their outlooks on life, we should be able to get them off this medicine.
And that's how you would handle that if the patient is able, and you're working with them going on into the future to taper them over time off of the Suboxone as well.
That's right. We want them off. I want them off that medicine. Right now, my goal has usually been that about a year, that conversation we start trying to come down the dose. If we come down gradually enough, people don't feel any withdrawal. But what they're fearful, I've just seen so many people fearful. They hated the life they had before, and Suboxone provided the freedom, and their life has changed, and they don't have to be on this mission every day.
Yeah,
and they are not convinced that they've changed enough or grown enough that they can face life without the protection of that Suboxone. You know, as a society, I think that opiate addiction causes so much pain and suffering. I mean, just theft, our courts, our jails, medical costs, just so big. I mean,
ruining families,
relationships. I mean, the brokenness in families. Exactly right. That I think. Society-wise, I think we probably, even if these people have to be on these medicines a long time, I think we are way better off if we can help these people stay productive and not relapse. Relapse is always a risk. It's always a risk. It's always a risk for the rest of their life, I think. We'll have to debate that, is how long these people are going to be on these.
And when I hear you talk about this, I think about, I know you're a family practice physician, and as well as I am a family practice physician. And when we deal with medical conditions, be that, like you said, type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, hypertension, or any other medical disease, we do not treat them and then go away. Kind of like what you said there. You know, we treat them for life, you know, and this too is something that is a treatment for life. I suspect, and it should be. I mean, why would we, like you said, why would we think that we can, that there's a fix and then you're done? No, this is a lifelong treatment. Alcoholism is a similar scenario. Alcoholism being in and of itself, I feel, is a disease process in most people who have it. And that's not something you fix and then it's gone, the person or the supporter, such as physician and family.
That's right.
It's an ongoing phenomenon that you forever are working with those who support you, including physician and family, forever. And likewise with opiate addiction.
That's right. It really, these people have to face that their whole life. It really has altered their way of thinking, and they have to work on that all the time.
And with with respect to that, the not give up-ness. In other words, if the patient is not able to be stable on the Suboxone or methadone, whatever their choice, or whatever, however they're doing it, and then be done with it, like tapered off within a few months or whatever, not to give up. Like you have said, and like I am saying as well, it's an ongoing lifetime phenomenon, this taking a power in your own life and helping this addiction disease thing you have. Everybody doesn't get addicted on opiates. Everybody doesn't get addicted on alcohol. There's some disease phenomenon involved in individuals that bring this out in them as well.
But there is, and the people have some risk factors for
yes.
this too. They're born with some risk factors for these
yes.
things,
such as family genetics of such a phenomenon within them. And so the keeping on going with support from doctors like yourself in the treatment of opiate addiction and to not give up once they've started, to know that it's the long haul. They're there for the long haul, not the short haul fix. That probably won't work. It's the long haul help. And I'm so glad to hear that you're part of this and doing
this. I just really have enjoyed it. You know, the other thing that I've seen in these people's lives is they have been rejected by their other family members.
Wow.
Because they have been hustling those family members for years. I mean, they've probably stolen from their family members. I need money for this and that.
Yeah.
And I've seen them in our program that those relationships have mended, and that is really touching to me. And they've been welcomed back to family reunions, and that's really that's really great. I tell you, that's rewarding to
excellent.
See that.
So back to life, back in life. Hey, I wanted to have you let us know a bit. Now, you kind of mentioned a couple areas. One is the Butte County Behavioral Health that you're currently involved with opiate addiction and partly Suboxone use as one of your tools for that. And then the other one was for people who have health insurance or monetarily better off to have other sources of Suboxone and other options relative to helping them with their addiction. Can you lay out options for the listeners? You know, we're going to have listeners who are maybe have health insurance or maybe have money to spend on treatment. Then we got listeners who don't and who may have Medi-Cal or managed care Medi-Cal. So
sure.
Kind of give us information on that.
There are a number of doctors who have the special training. If you take the special training, the Drug Enforcement Agency of the federal government gives you a special DEA number. You have to have a special DEA number.
DEA is Drug Enforcement Agency
That's
number.
Right.
It's what we
That's
all,
right.
all of us physicians need to have a Drug Enforcement Agency number in order to prescribe certain what we call controlled substances, which would be like Norco or opiates,
That's right.
morphine, Valium, those kind of products. If we don't have our DEA number, besides our license number, if we don't have our DEA number, we can't even prescribe those medicines.
That's right.
But this, what you're talking about, where Suboxone is additional Drug Enforcement Agency or DEA approval.
So there are a number of doctors in Butte County who have that additional DEA number. And you can actually go on the web and just ask about a Suboxone. There's a Suboxone doctor finder.
Wow.
For
people who are looking for a doctor in their area that can prescribe Suboxone.
That's right. And so you can find these doctors. There's a number of doctors who take insurance in Chico, for example.
Who prescribe for Suboxone.
I do prescribe for Suboxone. We're at the Behavioral Health Department. Our mission the way we fit into the medical community, we're really helping the poor mainly. You know, we're there to help provide a safety net for people who don't have access to care. So that is that is more our mission. So we're looking for people who have Medi-Cal or have that's our mainly our mission is that safety net provider. but there are other providers as well. One of the unique things about this medicine is that when you get that special license, you're only allowed to do 30 patients your first year. They limit you to 30 patients, and then after the first year, you can apply to the DEA for permission to go up to 100 patients. And just this year, if you're at 100, you can ask for permission to increase to 275, and I'm waiting for my approval for that. I'm not up to 100, but I'm getting up there, and I'm now that I'm doing this full time, I want to have that option.
Mm-hmm.
I do find that kind of ironic that there's no limit on how much a doctor can prescribe Norco, as many patients as many patients you want for Percocet. I mean, nobody's limiting you there. You don't take any special training. Mm-hmm. It is a little ironic why they're creating this little hurdle here, and why I find the medicine to be very very straightforward to prescribe, and it's very safe. There are some uniquenesses to it, but that's just interesting. I can't think of any other medicine like that where you're limited like that. Especially,
yeah, I wonder why the numbers.
They come up 30 and 100 and 275. So,
wow.
Do you know any other any medicines that have like limits like that? I mean, no limits on how many Norco patients you could prescribe if you wanted to.
Sky's the limit.
Sky's the limit on that. I mean, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But so anyway, that's unique.
Hey, Dr. Lundberg, it has been a true joy again. I would like to hear more about this as time goes on. I realize this is kind of a new adventure in your professional life, and the things you're doing with this and how you're helping people is just a, like I've said before, you're one of my heroes, Dr. Lundberg. And so I want to hear more about this in the future. Is that okay with you?
That'd be great. It'd be great. It's a very interesting topic, and I think opiate addiction is going to stay in the front of the national sort of
spotlight
conversation,
yeah.
I think, because there's a lot of questions around that.
Now, patients, let's say a patient that is low income, has Medi-Cal or managed care Medi-Cal, has an opiate addiction, how would they seek help?
Call behavioral health, and they can get an appointment with a counselor. You know, for us, critical and required is you need to be involved with counseling. We want to build strength in people's lives. We want to build new tools in their life to deal with stress. We want to build strength in their life, and Suboxone does not do that alone. And we really got to build in people's lives. So they'll meet with a counselor first. If they come to our department, they'll meet with a counselor. The counselor will talk to them about the counseling requirements and why we want to build that strength in their life. And then they'll have an appointment with me. But Buchanan Behavioral Health will help.
So the process of opiate addiction, help with it. Opiate addiction is kind of a multifaceted facets, and it's a program of various areas of help, and that's
a
good thing.
Yeah, it's not just one thing. There's for sure.
Gotcha. And it's Butte County Behavioral Health, and people could Google that or find that in the phone book or.
You know, the Chico number is 879-3795 would get you into our
So Butte County Behavioral Health, for someone addicted to opiates who wants to find treatment and get started with counseling and then further treatment, the phone number in Chico is
879-3795.
Say that one more time.
879-3795.
All right. Thank you very much, Dr. Lundberg. Well, let's take a little music break, and we'll be back to hear about Proposition 61 and the issues about the pharmaceutical industry in this country. Thanks, Dr. Lundberg. We'll see
Great
you
be
all.
With you. Have a good night, Ray.
We'll see you. We'll be back after a little music break. Thank you. Hello, this is Ken Logan, Dr. Ken Logan and the Doctor's End. Today, for the remainder of the show, we're going to be speaking with Tom Reed, the founder of Butte County Healthcare Coalition, which is a grassroots organization in our community, supporting and pushing for a universal healthcare called single-payer healthcare for all of us in this country to have equal and appropriate health care. And this gentleman, Tom Reed, is the founder of that organization 20-some-odd years ago. He's very sharp on these issues of health care availability. And he's a social activist. He's, again, one of my heroes. Tom Reed, thank you for being here. And hello.
Hello, Ken.
One of the reasons that you are going to be on the show today and is to talk about one of the propositions this November, Proposition 61. And the first thing on the top of my head is I'd like to know about it, know what it is, and I'd like the listeners to know about it, and then I want to hear your feelings about it, et cetera.
Sure. Prop 61 is the California Drug Price Relief Act. It is actually a first step towards regulation of drug prices and ending the avaricious vampire-like behavior of the American pharmaceutical companies, plural. How it works would be this, and this will take effect in the middle of next year if it passes. It would require the state of California to negotiate rates for pharmaceuticals for any program where the state of California is the ultimate payer. Okay, so this only really covers roughly 12% of the population, but it saves a huge amount of money for the taxpayers. This would cover people who are involved in Medicare fee-for-service programs. It does not cover the HMO component of that. They already negotiate. It covers CalPERS members. It covers roughly 112,000 people who are incarcerated in the state prisons. It covers 31,000 participants in the AIDS Drug Assistance Program and others. But this is the basic idea here is for the state to negotiate rates with the pharmaceutical industry for people who are involved in those programs and would, in so doing, save taxpayers several hundred million dollars a year.
So negotiating, tell me how the proposition would affect that. I mean, how would it empower the negotiating ability of the state?
Well, it would put into law the fact that California cannot pay more for a particular drug than the VA pays.
Oh.
And to put that in perspective, the VA, on average, pays about 40% less than Medicare Part D. So we're talking big-time money. Now, people say that really being rude to the insurance industry, they're not going to make any money. They will. They'll make money. They make money off of the VA. There are virtually every advanced capitalist state in the world has some kind of a universal health care program. They all negotiate rates with the pharmaceutical industry. The pharmaceutical companies all make money. What they don't like is the fact that we would stop them, we would make them act like a normal business where they make profits and not super profits.
Yeah.
We find that companies making 20 and 30% a year net profit, that's not the way a capitalist economy ordinarily would be expected to work. So that's the whole idea. We're trying to get to the point where the state of California would negotiate with these guys and essentially save a lot of money for the state of California, which could go into other healthcare programs or other programs. The goal here, ultimately, from my standpoint, and I think many other people as well, is that this would serve not only to save money for the California taxpayers, but also serve as a model for other programs going forward to look at
for future.
Yeah, what works, what doesn't work. One of the big things here is that we would like to see Medicare be able to negotiate with the pharmaceutical industry under the law now, under the Affordable Care Act. They're forbidden to do so. Under the Part D legislation that went into effect during the George Bush administration, they're forbidden to do so.
And just for the listeners to know, Part D, you know, for Medicare, Part D patients who are people who are 65 or older or younger who are disabled and are on federal insurance, health insurance, Medicare. There's the Part B, which means visits to your doctor and to the hospital. Part D that Tom Reed is talking about has to do with medications. Patients who are on Medicare do not necessarily participate with Part D, but they, in order to be on Part D, they contract, the patient contracts with a pharmaceutical company who has that ability to cover Part D because, you know, partly they get federal funds partly to do that, I'm told. But nonetheless, then the patient is able to have some discount available to them relative to their prescription medications. And what Tom is telling us is that currently Medicare Part D, we as a people are not able
negotiate
with the pharmaceutical companies relative to the costs to us as people by law. And so Proposition 61, at least in the state of California, would be a place to start relative to mandating some negotiating relative to the state funds that are paying for medications on that percentage of patients in the state of California that we all as taxpayers participate in the funding of their prescription medications. Well, 61 would say, hey, we want to, by law, say that the pharmaceutical industry needs to negotiate with the state of California relative to the costs of these products. It's not an open door. Pharmaceutical companies, you can charge whatever you want with nothing holding you back, but we want negotiating ability.
Yeah, and we're optimistic at this point, but the pharmaceutical industry has gone so over the top with some of the stuff that's come out.
It's really made the news, hasn't it,
lately? In the last
few
months, it's made the news. I think that a lot of people in California, maybe most of us, and in the U.S. In general, have had just about enough. As far as the Medicare thing goes, I would just mention in passing that both Secretary Clinton and Senator Sanders during the primary came out endorsing the idea of requiring Medicare to negotiate with the pharmaceutical industry, which again could save the Social Security folks billions of dollars and reduce the power of the health insurance, of the pharmaceutical industry. Senator Sanders has introduced legislation in the Senate to that effect. And Representative Elijah Cummings has introduced legislation into the House. So that's
good.
We're a long way from passing
right.
it federally, but at least it's out there, and we can begin discussing it and start fighting for it.
And like you said, I just want to reiterate something you said, and that's the VA, the Veterans Administration. In other words, our federal government program for our veterans relative to medication pricing, there is federal VA negotiating with pharmaceutical companies is part of that program.
Right.
Pharmaceutical companies, when they're charging the VA customer, VA and the customers for the cost of those pharmaceuticals, they don't charge whatever they want. It's negotiated through this government program, the VA program.
Right.
Correct.
Correct. And they still make money. They make a lot of money
right.
from the VA. They just don't make as much money as they would like.
Yeah. You know, I've had this this little idea in my head, Tom, that you know, the pharmaceutical, the costs of prescription medications have really been ramping up, have been increasing lately over the last year or two, or maybe a little more. And I've something in the back of my brain is saying the pharmaceutical industry, like you said, they're making profit margins that are increasing, even during our recession.
Mm-hmm.
They were not recessing; they were increasing in their profit margins.
Absolutely.
Ongoing, and something, and now that the recession is essentially over, their profit margins are increasing again, even higher and higher. And something is in my brain is telling me they are getting ready for implementation somehow, a fight, a kick, a revolution, if you will, or some fight by the people in this country, similar to how we're doing with Proposition 61, to put some kind of regulation on the pharmaceutical industry because of how they're putting us into poverty,
right.
and many patients into poverty. And so what I'm thinking, they're getting ready to have us all clamp down on them, and so that's one of the reasons they're increasing their charges on their medications, increasing. Shouldn't happen. It's wrong.
It shouldn't, and they play games. You'll notice that the stuff comes out that Company X has quintupled the price of,
yeah.
of Medicine B.
Yeah.
And they'll mumble around and finally admit it, and then they will cut it back by 20%.
Yeah, ridiculous.
Acting like they've done us a big favor.
Right.
Your comment about the posture of the pharmaceutical industry, this it may not look like it, but this is a life and death struggle for them, because if we win here, it will spread. Right now,
win here as in Proposition 61,
California Prop 61.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And just before I forget it, Prop 61. Just a couple of endorsing folks. Bernie Sanders has endorsed Prop 61. In fact, he's identified it as one of the seven most important initiatives in the country this fall.
Mm-hmm.
AARP has endorsed it. Mm-hmm. The California Nurses Association,
mm-hmm.
The California Physicians Alliance, the AIDS Healthcare Foundation, and locally the Butte County Healthcare Coalition.
And the pharmaceutical industry is spending money to fight this
proposition? They are spending big bucks. At this point, we're being outspent more than 10 to 1. And we expect that...
What a surprise.
This is a big deal for them.
Mm-hmm.
They like to be able to charge what they want to charge. They like to be able to continue paying their CEOs $20-30 million a year and more. They like 20% and 30% profit rates, and they see this as a threat to that. They will spend whatever they think they need to do. It has been suggested that this might end up being the most expensive initiative in the history of the state of California, and not that I have any great insight into that, but I wouldn't be surprised. This is a big deal. They will lie. They will scheme. They will do whatever they need to do to try to stop it.
To fight against it.
Mm-hmm. And what we have... is some very good, worthy organizations, and we need to mobilize people. And I'll talk a little bit about that in a bit.
Okay. Yeah, I'd like to hear more.
One of the claims that's made in opposition to Prop 61 is that if we reduce the profits of the insurance industry, we will be basically cutting the throat of pharmaceutical innovation. That we're not going to have any good new, not going to have any good new medications. Mm-hmm. And again, we already pay for most basic pharmaceutical research in this country with our taxes, for the most part, through the National Institutes of Health, through various universities. There are some small biotech groups, often biotech startups, who take a chance and come up with something big, and the insurance company usually buys it for a nickel on the dollar. The idea that somehow you're going to eliminate creative people doing creative things is complete nonsense.
It's wrong. It's actually not. It's not. There's no way a for-profit pharmaceutical company is going to decrease their research and development for new products that bring them profit.
Mm-hmm.
They will do everything they can relative to their other profits, or wherever their other profits go, to keep going with research and development. They can't blame a decrease in their profits as the cause of putting them out of business. That's not a capitalistic statement. That's the opposite of capitalism. What they're saying, and they don't live by the opposite of capitalism. So that's what's the word? That's a smokescreen.
Mm-hmm.
A smokescreen.
Yeah, and Dr. Marcia Angel, who was the former editor of the New England Journal. New England Journal of Medicine, has documented the fact that most research conducted by pharmaceutical companies is not basic research. Most of it has to do with what are called Me Too drugs, where you avoid you find a drug that's making a good profit, and you try to model the drug after it, getting as close as you can without violating the patent. So let's say you have a good cholesterol drug,
mm-hmm.
and you're making a lot of money off it. My company will look at that drug and say, how can we come up with something just as
close.
Good, but without violating the patent? The other things that these companies do is they do research to extend their patents. They try to make just a minor modification of a drug. No significant improvement.
Oh, God, we've seen it so many times.
Yeah. But there's that kind of stuff. And,
yeah, so they can keep their profit, keep their patent going.
Right.
On a similar, very closely associated product for their profit reasons.
And they go around saying that regulation is contradictory to their free market principles, which don't exist. But yet they're not willing to try to compete with generic drugs.
Right.
They get their 5 or their 10 or their 20 years of monopoly, and then when that's run out, then they whine and cry because they have to compete with generics, which work just as well. They're chemically identical, and so forth. The other point that I would want to make about that argument that we're going to lose innovation is that the pharmaceutical industry today, as we speak, is spending a lot more money on marketing than they ever spent on research, many times more in some cases.
Are you talking about like television?
Yeah.
Where at certain times of television, I don't watch much, but one prescription product or over-the-counter product after another, after another, after another. It's like, don't any other companies advertise on television during that time in the evenings, the prime time? My gosh.
Yeah, I don't watch a lot, but again, if you watch for an hour, you'll see at least 2 or 3 ads, sometimes 5 or 6 or more. And we are one the organization.
For millions.
Yeah, they spend $3 billion a year of our money selling us these images. Mm-hmm. We are one of 2 countries, advanced capitalist democracies, along with New Zealand, 2 out of 34 in the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, who allow direct to consumer advertising. Mm. The American Medical Association has just come out in opposition to it, asking for a ban on it. Because you need a break, right?
No.
Okay. Because it doesn't sell drugs. It sells dreams. It sells sexuality. It sells attractiveness. It sells athleticism. It sells spending good time with your grandkids. Some of those medicines might actually be good for some people some of the time. But my doctor is much more adept at making that decision, that recommendation
Absolutely.
To me on a clinical basis than me watching something that says that, you know, if I have osteoarthritis and can barely walk, the next thing I know, if I take this pill, I'll be out playing soccer with my grandkids.
No.
And that's the fantasy that's being sold through these kind of manipulative
and even coming up with new names for new syndromes and diagnoses because they have a medicine to play a role in that. I've never seen anything like it until the last few years.
Well, you're going to be seeing more of it if you let them get away with it, because you get to the point, and this happens as they approach the end of their patent.
Oh, yeah.
They will identify or create a new medical condition for which the drug can be used, and they get a patent extension based upon that fact.
Tom, so Proposition 61, just to let you know, I'm going to vote yes on Proposition 61.
I would hope so.
And I got to move along now.
Okay. Could I just take one more second?
Yes.
And encourage people certainly to vote yes on Prop 61. The only way we're going to win it is through a popular mobilization of the people in the state, contributing little bits of money and a lot of time. Anybody who would like to learn more about this initiative or is willing to become involved by contributing money or contributing time, we're trying to get more radio shows. We're trying to get letters to the editor. We're going to be doing cabling at the farmers market and other locations. We're trying to get endorsements at different organizations. I'm going to give my phone number twice so people can grab a pencil. My telephone number is area code 530-966-3414.
So this is Tom Reed, who will take your calls to help you become involved relative to Prop 61.
Correct.
And various aspects thereof. So, and Tom Reed, your phone number again is?
Once again, is 530-966-3414. You don't have to be an expert. You don't even have to know anything about this, except what you just learned.
966-3414. Thank you very much, Tom.
Thank you, Ken.
Hope to be talking to you in the near future.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks, Tom Reed, Butte County Healthcare Coalition founder, social activist in our community, and a great guy. And thank you to Mark Lundberg for talking to us about opiate addiction and Butte County behavioral health treatment thereof. And thanks to Ray Lager, the engineer for this show. Listen the third Thursday of each month, 6 o'clock to 7 o'clock, for the Doctor's Inn. And the Doctor's Inn has been made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by North Rim Adventure Sports, specializing in bicycles, cycling apparel, and equipment. North Rim offers full-service bicycle sales, service and rentals, and features Trek Bicycles USA and other top brands. North Rim Adventure Sports is located at 178 East 2nd Street in downtown Chico and on the web at northrimadventure.com. And by Walter Lucas, health insurance agent in Chico. Walter helps people turning 65 find Medicare supplement insurance so they can see any doctor who accepts Medicare. Already have Medicare supplement? You may save money and keep the same benefits with a different company. Call 893-0296 or at waltlucas@sunset.net for a free consultation. Stress less, live better. Walter Lucas Insurance. And just to let you know, the opinions voiced on this show do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. See you the third Thursday of the month, Doctor's Inn, 6 to 7. Stay tuned for Beatle Nation. Bye-bye. I don't need no doctor, because I know what's ailing me. I do. I've been too long away from my baby. I'm coming down, I'm coming down with the misery. Well, I don't need no doctor or prescription to be filled. I don't need no doctor. I don't need no doctor. I don't need no doctor, Lord, or prescription to be filled. I don't need no doctor. I don't. I don't need no doctor. Oh, only my baby's arms. A good